Welcome to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Coming up in today's program, we've got segments on protest and pulling together. Up first, throughout this season on Rediscovered Radio, we've heard voices from the 1960s and 70s from the peace movement, black power, and native rights activists. The early days of the women's movement is represented in our collection as well. Community Voices producer Jocelyn Robinson gives us a sampling of the women's voices that can be heard there.
There was a young woman who swallowed a lie. We all know why she swallowed that lie. Perhaps she'll die. There was a young woman who swallowed.
International Women's Day in 1973. Young women at Antioch College and around the country were taking cues from the civil rights movement. They were raising consciousness and their voices in solidarity with their sisters everywhere, and WYSO was there to record the event. The rally that day included singing, and speakers like striking garment workers from the Farrah Pants Factory in Texas, low-income moms, and homegrown activists from the Yellow Springs Women's Center.
We're going to have some more songs in a minute, but we have some speakers. I think we should get to it. But before we hear from the speakers, I think we should talk briefly about the history of International Women's Day and women's role in American labor history. It's something that we always hear so little about. International Women's Day grew specifically out of a demonstration in 1908 of female garment workers in New York City. But it grew really out of...
WYSS collection doesn't contain many big names from women's liberation. It's local and intimate, reflecting grassroots aspects of the movement. For example, here's Antioch College faculty member Marge Nelson. Marge Nelson became a radical feminist lesbian after traditional marriage and raising a family. She lectured on the history of the movement.
All right, let me tell you how I see the women's movement. I see it as a fundamental social movement that is and has always been concerned with basic social change. And when I talk about basic social change, I mean change in all of the major institutions of this society. As such, the women's movement is and always has been related to other movements for basic social change.
In the summer of 73, the Radical Feminist Collective of Dayton Women's Liberation made a recording of a sort of rap session on marriage. The recording quality isn't very good, but the tape provides an honest view into the lives of real women with real experiences.
When I was getting married, it was like there was something wrong with you if you didn't.
One woman says the only reason she got married was because she was supposed to, that not marrying was considered socially unacceptable.
You were socially unacceptable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's
I mean, it was really a weird thing.
The WYSO archives has more specials, too, on women's working conditions, on how young girls are socialized, on women's health issues. And there's Women in Music, a weekly program that aired from 1975 to 2002 with a changing cast of dedicated hosts. They played influential women artists like Chris Williamson, Holly Near, and Sweet Honey in the Rock, and kept listeners informed about music festivals and other events that created feminist solidarity in the Miami Valley and beyond.
Music sets my heart on fire. Magic soars upon the wind, it fills me with desire. When I hear music, music makes it all worthwhile. Sorrow bursts into a song, and I remember.
In the future, we'll explore these recordings and trace the threads of the women's movement that weave through the WYSO archives. Until then, here's the Antioch Women's Liberation Jug Band in 1972, taking us out to I'm a W-O-M-A-N. For Rediscovered Radio at WYSO, I'm Jocelyn Robinson.
To hear the historical audio in its entirety and see photos of the women's movement in the Dayton area, visit WYSO.org. Rediscovered Radio is supported in part by Ohio Humanities, a state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WYSO Weekend. Thanks so much for joining us. This week on Dayton Youth Radio, we have a story from Stivers student Emma Johnson, who's learning about feminism and activism from her grandmother.
I became a feminist in part because things started hitting me in the face.
That's my grandmother, who I call Cha-Cha. She's one of my most important role models because she taught me how to stand up for myself, as a person and as a woman. and taught me that if anyone ever bothered me, to kick them in the balls and move on.
Don't listen to fake news or alternative facts, but read the newspaper and pay close attention, and then you need to act.
Cha-Cha taught me how to use my voice, but she didn't always know how to use her voice.
I grew up in a very conservative household, very traditional for the 50s and 60s.
A woman at that stage couldn't get a mortgage without having her father or her husband co-sign for it. I couldn't get a credit card in my own name. The hardest issues were the economic ones.
From marching in the 60s to knitting pussy hats for her granddaughters and for the Women's March on Washington, D.C., she has inspired me to be bold, be loud.
Can you tell us why you started knitting pussy hats? Because that's one of my favorite things that you do.
Well, I started knitting the Pussy Power hats because it's a symbol of the movement, and it appeals particularly to those young people that need the inspiration and need to be inspired to have the stamina to stick this out. And I like to knit, so it's fun. It makes me happy to sit there knitting resistance. That's how I look at it.
The night that Trump won the election, I messaged Cha to tell her how sorry I was. I stayed up all night and realized that it doesn't matter how qualified a woman might be, how smart or strong. I realized that women always have a disadvantage in comparison to the rights of men.
Trump won this time, but he did it by collaborating with the Russians and appealing to the basest in people.
So, what do you think is the worst thing that could happen during this presidency for women?
I don't know that the worst thing is necessarily for women as much as for black women and Hispanic women and Muslim women who risk living in this country. The number of hate crimes that have happened since Trump took office is scary.
Cha-Cha and I have been to multiple protests together. The first one we went to together was a protest against the Muslim travel ban.
I am proud of the woman that you've become and the fact that you are active and involved and that you did go to that march. That march was a memory for me, too. The Trump administration is reversing a lot of the social gains that we've made over the last 40, 50 years. This is going to be an interesting election in 2018 because we are going to raise hell. We are nasty women and bad dudes.
Bad hombres.
Bad hombres, yes.
I want people to wake up. I don't want to hear another one of my friends say, I'm not going to vote because my vote doesn't matter.
I know this is your first serious venture into politics, and I know from my experiences in the 60s and 70s that you're going to win some and you're going to lose some. And yeah, you cry and you feel like life is over, and then you pick yourself up and you start all over again.
Thank you so much for talking to me today, Cha. I really appreciate you being in my life and teaching me how to not let myself get bullied. And I love you.
I love you too.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, dear.
I did this story because I think that my grandmother has spent far too much of her valuable life fighting for rights that she should have been given in the first place. I fight for her every day and will keep fighting until she has the rights she has been denied. The rights that all women are being denied. For Dayton Youth Radio at Stivers School for the Arts, this is Emma Johnson.
That was a story entitled Cha-Cha and Me, written and produced by Stivers High School student Emma Johnson. Special thanks to Emma's grandma, Karen Veve, and also to Leslie Rogers and Eva Maxudas at Stivers. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basine Blunt.
To hear more Dayton Youth Radio stories, visit our website, wyso.org, or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Armott Boyer Charitable Trust, Fifth Third Bank trustee. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. In studio with us is Aaron Sari, founding director of the Beloved Community Project. They have an event coming up on May 17th at the First Presbyterian Church in Yellow Springs. We'll tell you all about that. It's called Hashtag Viable Nonviolence. Aaron, welcome to the studios.
It's very good to be here. Thank you.
So let's talk about the genesis of the Beloved Community Project first, before we get into this event.
Great. Thanks. So the Beloved Community Project grows directly out of my doctoral dissertation. I am blessed to be in the only doctoral program in the country that focuses specifically on a concept called beloved community. Most people associate that with Martin Luther King, and that's a right association. He's the one who really brought it into the popular parlance. But it's a concept that goes all the way back to the 19th century to a guy named Josiah Royce. And he saw the increasing narcissism of the Enlightenment period and of modernism being a direct threat to society. So he argued philosophically that all of the classical virtues that Socrates and Plato wrote about, the only way that those could come about was in community. And he called this beloved community. And then enters into the African-American tradition. And probably the most important person to get a hold of it was a man named Howard Thurman. Howard Thurman was an African-American pastor who went to India, and he was part of the first ever African-American contingent to go to India, and he met Gandhi. And Gandhi said that the Hindu concept of ahimsa, of no harm, would find perfection through the American Negro experience. And Howard Thurman was so moved by that. Howard Thurman himself being an African-American pastor with a PhD, he was dean of chapel at Howard University, set for life. He quits his job. He goes out to San Francisco, and he founds the first ever multiracial, multireligious community that's called the Church for the Fellowship of All Peoples, and it still stands in San Francisco today. And he started that with a Presbyterian pastor in 1944. Thurman ends up at Boston University, where he's also dean of chapel, and that's where he meets Dr. King. And it's Howard Thurman who introduces Dr. King to this concept of beloved community, which is also called World House. And listeners of your show will probably be very familiar with the World House Choir here in the Dayton area with Dr. Kathy Roma. And so starting the Beloved Community Project was really filling out the other half of the circle that Dr. Roma had started with the World House Choir. The Beloved Community Project is an intentional, multi-faith, including atheists and agnostics, collective. And we gather around art, around food, around music, around education, and around justice. And the event we're having on Wednesday is the end of our first year of activities. And as you mentioned, it's called Hashtag Viable Nonviolence. My dissertation advisor, Dr. Tony Hunt, will be in the area, and he's going to come speak to us about the role of nonviolent resistance in 21st century activism. Because many people wonder if nonviolent activism places too much of a burden on already vulnerable people, on African Americans, on women, on trans persons. And so we're trying to have a larger conversation about what nonviolent resistance and action really is, and how we as a community can all use our privilege and all use our resources to support one another. But also it's an opportunity for us to get together, have a great meal. It starts at 6 o'clock, free food. We have childcare. This is family friendly. We're hoping that people will come out, help be part of this discussion, listen to what Dr. Tony has to say, and that we'll then be able to continue that conversation in the weeks and months ahead.
I want to talk to you about just a little bit to touch on, you know, what's taking place across the country and actually around the world.
Yeah, that's a great question. I appreciate you asking it. I think that for anyone who is paying attention, right now is overwhelming. It's almost like things are happening so quickly with such incredible consequence to people's lives that many people don't know where to turn. And the Beloved Community Project seeks to be kind of a centralized hub where we can come together, we can educate one another, we can receive education. We also are committed to art and music as forms of political expression. So we have an artistic director, Anna Burke, who is a local artist many people know of. Ryan Stinson is our musical director. He's the guitarist in Gin Soaked Angels. And so we're borrowing a lot from our forerunners in the 50s and the 60s. We're taking some of the best things from the civil rights movement and from the cultural movement. But we're also trying to make sure that we're not wasting energy. So the viable nonviolence is a way for us to come together and say, man, I see you. I see you. I hear you. I hear your concerns. I've got some confusion too, but perhaps our parts will line up and we'll be able to collaborate and really try to make a difference. And for me, being a Christian and being a Christian pastor, nonviolence is the only way to go. But I also recognize that that's privilege. As a white man, I get to choose nonviolence in ways that many other people don't. And that's an important conversation to have.
Before we reiterate the details on this event, can you tell us a little bit more about the work that you're doing with the Beloved Community? Other projects underway?
Sure. Yeah, we have a big project underway that will launch in the fall. We are developing strong relationships with our Muslim neighbors, in Springfield, particularly with the mosque that is there. I brought the kids from my church there, taught them the five pillars. But we're also connecting with the Muslim Student Association at Sinclair Community College. And in the fall, we're hoping to do a six-week series of events, education, activism, and food, around what it really means to be a sanctuary community. We hear that term a lot. So what's involved? What does it mean? And what do the immigrants, particularly the Muslim immigrants in our community, what are the needs that they have? So instead of us coming into a community and saying, here are the things we're going to do for you, it's going to be, let's create space and opportunity for real dialogue to figure out how we can assist one another. But also to be committed to the fact that, you know, someone who's a devout Muslim and someone who is a devout atheist, they're going to disagree on things, and that's okay. We don't have to pretend that we're not. So we're really committed to that honest, authentic relationship that says we're not going to smooth over the rough edges, but we're going to commit to stick with one another. Because the fact is, if we don't, then we're in a lot of trouble. We need one another.
We're speaking with Aaron Sari. He's the founding director of Beloved Community Project. And the event is May 17th from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church in Yellow Springs. It's called Hashtag Viable Nonviolence. Where can folks find out information on getting to this event?
You can go to our Facebook page, which is Beloved Community Project YS. You can also contact First Presbyterian Church of Yellow Springs at 937-767-7751.
Aaron, thanks so much for your time and good luck with the Beloved Community Project and the event.
Thank you so much for having me.
Police departments around the country are exploring ways to improve their relationship with their local communities. Commentator Rebecca Ryan decided to see what she could do as a citizen to learn more about her local police.
With so much negative behavior and publicity in police forces across America, I decided to enroll in the Kettering Citizens Police Academy to gain some insight into my own community's police force. I had no idea just how deep that insight would go. Chief Christopher Protzman greeted us on the first day, telling us they hire only the best officers who are held to strict standards daily. As the 8 weeks proceeded, I came to see the chief wasn't just saying empty words. We truly do have police who are filled with heart, courage, and pride. And this isn't limited to Kettering. The chief told us he frequently meets with the police chiefs in the area to ensure a unified front that knows no borders. As each officer explained his or her job, I was struck by the pure camaraderie they have. The phrase, "I've got your back," is not just a phrase. It's a hardcore truth. These are folks who are trained to literally lay down their lives for their fellow officers. This deep, familiar camaraderie comes out in the way they joke with one another, humor being the salve that eases the stress of a job that would otherwise eat them alive. One officer told us he was a music major before changing gears to become an officer. Before I could edit myself, I snorted out in laughter, way too awkwardly loud. I cringed, but the officer laughed along with me. This was the same jovial officer who looked at us with steady, purposeful eye contact, saying, "If you're ever in a situation with an active shooter, fight like you've never fought before. You are fighting for your life." He explained this very matter-of-factly, as if he were a parent telling his child not to forget his rain boots. Humor and brotherly bonds cannot completely mask the strain that this job brings to any good cop. One officer's eyes filled with tears as he told us he has seen children die while on duty. As he said this, his voice cracked, and he paused and bit his lip. I saw instantly that this is a man who takes his work home with him. As he explained of times when he has seen children being treated poorly, I had to leave the class early because it was too emotional for my thin skin. As I sat in my car weeping, it dawned on me how lucky I am to have the luxury of walking away from it, hugging my own kids close in blissful ignorance while officers lay awake at night, wondering how they can fix the problems they see. I'm grateful there are people with the ability to take on such enormous emotional work because I am not one of them. We saw a SWAT team demonstration, learned about everything from crime scene analysis to polygraph testing, and even had the chance to shoot a firearm. We got to see firsthand how officers have to make split-second decisions that could mean life or death. They are always in training to be well-equipped for such situations, constantly learning and growing to be prepared. The same goes for most police across the nation. Yes, there are bad police out there, the same way there are bad accountants, teachers, and mechanics. From what I've seen, our piece of Ohio is armed with men and women who genuinely care and actively put forth effort to meet the changing needs of society. Now, I'm not brave or strong, but I realize police aren't so different from me. They have kids they tuck in at night and whom they want to walk down the aisle one day. They have spouses they, too, drive crazy. Police are people who just so happen to care that you and I are safe. What a gift that is. After going through this class, aside from being grateful, I also feel a sense of responsibility. Having a safe community should not weigh solely on the shoulders of our police force. It should be distributed evenly on all of us. The officers conveyed that they've noticed neighbors don't look out for each other like they used to. The mindset now is to mind our own business and to let the police take care of things. But I know now the police are taking care of a lot of things that we have no idea about. They are seeing things no one should see. So the least I can do is learn my neighbor's name and let them know they can rely on me. Now, that's a small thing, but if we all do it, that's a big thing. For WYSO, I'm Rebecca Ryan.
Rebecca Ryan is a writer who lives with her family in Kettering. A lot of today's program has focused on how people have or are currently handling differences of opinion, policy, and social issues. But there is one event coming up in Dayton next week that serves as a celebration of our differences while highlighting our commonality as human beings, a love of music and dance, and of course, food and beverages of all kinds. It's a world affair at the Dayton Convention Center. And very pleased this morning to have a guest in studio, Wayne Goulden, who is the treasurer of Dayton International Festival, the fine folks who are responsible for a world affair at the Dayton Convention Center, which runs May 19th through the 21st. Wayne, thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All right, so let's talk about this year's event. It really is a nice event between the food vendors and the entertainment.
Oh, yeah. There's 32 booths there, and almost all of them have some kind of food. And it's part of our deal that the food must be representative of where they're from.
With a good crowd, it gets a little packed, but it's like walking through a little village, and each corner offers you something just a little bit different.
Well, that's true. We try to make it so that the flow of the traffic is good for people. But there's another complication, that is getting the whole booths in and out of the convention center. You know, there's trucks and cars and everything else, right? And we have to have aisles for that, too. And so it gets to be a pretty complicated process. The fellow who does that, by the way, is Peter Wu. He puts all that together. It's quite an effort.
Peter is a volunteer?
Yes, we're all volunteers.
Okay, so yeah. You have also served as president and vice president in years past.
Yes, sir.
How do you pull the volunteers together every year? I imagine that you're going to be planning on May 22nd for next year's event.
Well, we start pretty early. But I tell you, in May 22nd, at 6 o'clock on the last day, right, Sunday, right,
yes.
There's this cheer that goes up. And it's not from the people there. It's from the people putting it on.
Yeah.
Because it's a long weekend.
Sure.
It really is. And you know, we're all volunteers, and we do it because we think it's valuable to expose people to different cultures. Every culture has something of value to, you know, say about the human condition.
Well, let's talk about some of the participating organizations
sure.
this year or new surprises that have been added to the event.
Well, about new, the new one is Kenya, part of Africa, of course, Eastern Africa. And Africa has had its own booth, if you will, for a long time. And what happens is Africa's got so many countries and it's been such a diaspora there, you know, people coming and going, that they kind of serve as an umbrella group for all the other groups. But then as their individual countries become more become larger, more viable, then they split off. And so we've had Burundi started up, and Sudan has started up, Kenya now. Egypt has come in fairly recently. And so we're getting actual individuals now from Africa, and it's quite nice to see that.
And are these from the local nationality clubs, or who are behind the individual booths?
Right. Normally all the groups here are also volunteer, all nonprofit. They have to be. And, yeah, they're normally people who are either first or second generation. Some of them came over directly. And so having our meetings is kind of a challenge because English is not the first language of a large part of the group there. And but they're normally – Kenya, for example, right, they are from Kenya.
People have been going to this year after year, but we were talking earlier, and you think there are quite a few people who don't know about this event.
Well, surprisingly, you know, we put about – $30,000, $40,000 into advertising every year. So, yeah, there still are people who don't know that we're there. We're in our 44th year. Imagine that. A whole generation and a half we've been doing this.
And that's incredible.
Yeah, it is. And we still hear from people who, as kids mostly, you know, they say, this really had an effect on me. And that kind of makes it worthwhile for us.
You've got performing this year the Tambouritans, and I think they'll be on stage multiple times.
Yeah, they're on stage. We have two stages, by the way, two full-time stages. One is, quote-unquote, the main stage. That's with bleachers and lighting and, you know, regular stage hands and sound systems and all that. Then the other one's a, we call the participatory stage, and that is less formal. It's it still has a schedule, and people show up at certain times, but part of their program normally is like teaching a dance to the participants who are around in tables, usually eating lunch or whatever.
Sure.
So it's nice. It's a nice informal setting. The Tambouritans will be on a total, I think, of seven times, four on the big stage and then three on the little stage. It's only on Saturday, though. So if you want to come see them, they have to be on Saturday.
Well, great. Let's talk about where people can find details on
this
year's event.
Okay. The main place to go is, of course, aworldaffair.org. That's aworldaffair.org. And there's no dashes or colons or commas or nothing like that, just a world affair.
Okay. And how many guests do you see throughout the weekend?
Oh, well, our total attendance is normally about 24,000, but
wow.
Last 2 years have been good years. We had 31,400 2 years ago and about 30,000 last year.
Wow.
So it's a big event. It's the largest international festival in Ohio. It's the second oldest international festival in Ohio after Columbus. And it's the largest event in downtown Dayton now, and it's the largest event at the convention center.
Well, great.
It's a pretty big deal.
Well, no reason to believe that this year's event won't be just as big.
Well, the weather has an interesting effect on it.
Does it?
Yeah, it does. Well,
okay.
we pray for rain, you know, I mean, in an odd sort of way, because we're indoors.
Ah.
You know, the whole thing's indoors, and a lot of the festivals are outdoors.
And rain works out for you.
Oh, yeah, and rain works out for us. It's kind of a crappy weekend.
Sure.
And so people say, well, let's go to the World Fair. And it doesn't cost much, you know.
It really is a nice event. And so we appreciate your time. We've been speaking with Wayne Goulden, treasurer of Dayton International Festival. They are the fine folks behind a World Affair event taking place May 19th, 20th, and 21st at the Dayton Convention Center. And again, you can get more information at aworldaffair.org. Wayne, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. We'll be back next Sunday morning at 10. Up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.